sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is A.J. Jacobs, author of The Year of Living Biblically, and the new book, It's All Relative. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mavenah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shin Shinim Chen Dinachi and Taminer Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. Hanukkah is nearly here, beginning this coming Tuesday night, December 12th. The 8 nights of Hanukkah represent an opportunity to renew our commitment to Jewish identity. And an interesting key to this festival is the time of day, or rather, night. As you probably know, all Jewish holidays begin at sundown, but none are quite so night-oriented, not even Passover, as Hanukkah. Bringing light into the season of the shortest days and longest nights of the year, Hanukkah is that rare Jewish holiday in which nearly all the observances are after dark. Sure, it's Hanukkah during the days too, and there's a couple of extra prayers to add, but it's a magical lighting of Chanukiyot. The Hanukkah menorahs or candelabra lit each night of the long festival that add one more light each night. That is the central observance of Hanukkah. We are commanded to fulfill the great mitzvah of Pirsomet HaNes, publicizing the miracle of God's redemption at this time of year, in those days long ago. And nothing does that better than lights burning brightly in the window, reminding us of the miraculous quality of God's redemption. Although considered a minor holiday on the Jewish religious calendar, in America, Hanukkah has become something quite major. In part, this is because of its proximity to that other end of the American calendar year holiday that everybody likes to celebrate so thoroughly and commercially. But in part, it's also because Hanukkah is a festival that celebrates religious freedom, the right to worship God as we choose. Without the events we commemorate at Hanukkah, the victory of the small Jewish guerrilla band led by the Maccabees over the mighty Syrian Greek army of the Seleucid Empire, back in the years 167 to 165 BCE, without that, the belief in one God would have been destroyed and religious freedom eliminated from the world. There would have been no more Jews, which means no Christians, and no Western civilization. For that matter, no Muslims either, since both Christianity and Islam are direct daughter-descendant religions of Judaism. The story of that great revolt, catalyzed by the egotism of King Antiochus IV Epiphanes and his need not only to be obeyed but also worshipped, is an underdog narrative about how a group of Jews refused to bow down to an idol or surrender their right to study Torah and educate their children in belief in God and the moral and practical principles of Judaism. They fought and died and eventually triumphed. And when they recaptured the temple in Jerusalem, they cleansed it and relit the great menorah and dedicated it anew to worship and holiness, a Chanukat HaBayit. The very word Hanukkah means dedication. So when we celebrate this coming week eating anything fried in oil, especially latkes, the fabulous potato pancakes, by the way, I have a fantastic sweet potato latke recipe available for purchase. No, actually, I'll just give it to you. We are celebrating something more than a kids' festival. We are enjoying our religious freedom, which was defended and reestablished nearly 2,200 years ago by the Maccabees. And religious freedom for all religions is a great Jewish ideal worth fighting for in their day as in ours. To play us in this morning, here's a setting from our pre-Hanukkah musical preview of the festival, coming up Tuesday night, December 12th, this Tuesday. It's a beautiful Sephardic version of Maoz Tzur, the Hanukkah hymn, by Yosef Darduner.
Maoz Tzur Yeshuati Lecha nae leshabeach Tikon beit tefilati ושם תודה נזבח לעת תכין מטבח מי צרה מנבח אז אגמור בשיר מזמור חנוכת המזבח האות סבא נפשי ביגון כוחי קהילה חיי מררו בקושי בשיבוד מלכות עגלה ובידו הגדולה הוציא הוציא את הסגולה חיל פרעה וכל זרעו ירדו כאבן במצולה דביר קודשו הביאני וגם שם לא שקטתי ובנו גס והגלני כי זרים עבדתי ויין רע על מסכתי כמעט שעברתי קץ בבל זרו
That was a lovely Sephardi-flavored Maoz Tzur, the Jewish Rock of Ages, that is, the original Rock of Ages, for the coming holiday of Hanukkah, beginning Tuesday night for 8 great nights. Our guest on Too Jewish this morning is A.J. Jacobs, the funny, charming, thoughtful author of The Year of Living Biblically, whose new book explores the genetic basis for who we each are. Find out what that means and what that means for the whole human family when we talk with A.J. Jacobs about It's All Relative in just a moment here on Too Jewish. We are delighted to welcome back to Too Jewish our guest, A.J. Jacobs, author, journalist, lecturer, entertainer, dare I say, and according to his own bio, human guinea pig, best known perhaps for his book, The Year of Living Biblically, an incredibly entertaining book. He has a new book out called It's All Relative, and it's about, well, frankly, how we are all related, and in particular, how he's related to just about everybody. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you, Rabbi. Great to be here.
So tell us how this began, this latest quest.
This was about 3 years ago, and I got a very strange email, and it said, you don't know me, but I'm your eighth cousin. And I figured the next line is going to be, okay, wire $10,000 to my Nigerian bank account.
Exactly.
But it turned out he wasn't a scammer. He was legitimate. He was actually a dairy farmer on a kibbutz in Israel, and he's part of this group of people building the biggest family tree in history. Literally millions of people, dozens of countries, hundreds of ethnic groups, and they're all on one family tree. And this just blew me away because I always thought genealogy could be a little stodgy, but nowadays it's thrilling, and it has a huge impact on everything from politics to race relations to health. So I thought, this has got to be my next book.
It's sort of the General Sherman of family trees, right? You know, like this giant redwood that goes in every direction. What was the most startling thing you discovered when you started to dig into this?
Well, if once you get on this family tree, you can connect to pretty much anyone on Earth. It's almost like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but everyone is Kevin Bacon. So I can connect to all of my Jewish cousins. That's easy. But then I can get Barack Obama, for instance. He's my fifth great aunt, husband's brother's wife, seventh great nephew. So very close. We're like brothers. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I'm also connected to Jeffrey Dahmer, but that is through my wife's side.
Okay, so not really your fault.
That's right.
You know, DNA research has become extremely interesting. It's changed a tremendous amount over the last, even 15 years, but certainly in the last few years, it's become so much easier to find this stuff. Everybody wants to find out, you know, if they have Cossack blood or Khazar blood or something. This is a little different than that.
It is, but it's also related, so to speak, because there are several revolutions going on in in families, and one of them are these massive online trees, which are like, sort of like Wikipedia, with thousands of people around the world, each one contributing a little jigsaw piece, and ending up with trees where you have like 200 million people on them. But that's also related to the DNA, because part of how we connect is using the data from DNA. So it is all connected, and helping us create what they call the world family tree, where everyone eventually will be connected.
We will talk much more with A.J. Jacobs. His new book is called It's All Relative, and we'll talk about the implications of being related to everyone when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song is now pretty much iconic. In fact, it may have moved to the status of a musical semi-classic, perhaps even in a chestnut, not over an open fire. But last year, Adam Sandler recorded a fourth version of the Hanukkah song, and in advance of the great holiday of lights and latkes coming up Tuesday night, here it is.
Put on the yarmulke. So much Hanukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we get hey. When you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's the fourth list of people who are Jewish. Just like Jesus, Olaf, Punky Brewster, Scott Rudin, and me. Joseph Gordon-Levitt enjoys eating kugel. So does Stanley, Jake Gyllenhaal, and the two guys who founded Google. Adam Levine wears a Jewish star, so does Drake and Seth Rogen. Goldberg has a gold yarmulke to match the belt he won from Hulk Hogan. We got Scarlett Johansson, talk about a kosher crush. And if you need a higher voice to turn you on, how about Geddy Lee from Rush? We may not have a cartoon with the reindeer that can talk, but we also don't have polio, thanks to Dr. Jonas Salk, smart Jew. Put on the yarmulke, it's time for Hanukkah. Harry Potter and his magic wanaka, celebrate Hanukkah. Jared from Subway. God damn it, a Jew! But guess who's Jewish and can fix him? Loveline's Dr. Drew! Get on it, Doc! Princess Leia cuts the challah with Queen Elsa from Frozen. David Beckham is the king of soccer studs and also a quarter chosen. Ron Jeremy's fully Jewish, and so's his footlong buddy. Shia LaBeouf is half a Jew, but 100% nutty. It's cool that Santa Claus makes Christmas so merry, but we get two jolly fat guys.
ice creams, Ben and Jerry, both Jewish. From New York to Ironica, get up there, celebrate Hanukkah. Don't mess with the Zohanukkah. Let's all get along for Hanukkah. So drink your Jaeger Bombica and smoke your medical chronica. If you really, really want to, have a happy, 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 happy.
That was Adam Sandler's newest Hanukkah song for the Holiday of Lights, beginning Tuesday night. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, it's almost Hanukkah. Hanukkah was in many ways an anti-Semitic event that led to the Hasmonean Revolt, the idea that Jews couldn't practice as Jews. I started to think a little bit about some of the really influential pieces of anti-Semitism and their weird stories of creation, in particular, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, but first a point of clarification, because you may have confused some of your listeners when you said that Hanukkah was essentially an anti-Semitic event.
Well, sorry.
I think what you meant was Hanukkah commemorates a Jewish reaction to an anti-Semitic regime.
Thank you, that's much clearer.
And that, you know, I just wanted to
Hanukkah
clarify.
Yeah, no, Hanukkah is not an anti-Semitic holiday, right. It's a Jewish holiday.
Okay,
very positive.
So,
thank you.
And it is a post-biblical holiday.
Yes, indeed.
So it's not one of the holidays commanded in the Bible, and therefore we can do work and light candles and cook and do all that stuff on Hanukkah, which we can't do during Pesach or Sukkot or any of the biblical holidays. So, but we're not here to talk about Hanukkah. We're here to talk about anti-Semitic literature. And probably the most famous piece of all of it is the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which came out early in the 20th century. And we were talking off mic about the fact that it has been a long-standing bestseller in Japan, of all places.
Of all places.
A country that has virtually no indigenous Jewish community at all. There are some expatriate business people in Tokyo, and
Israelis
in the past
and
there have
so
been some
right.
GIs and whatever. But these are all transients. They're not part of Japanese society,
well,
and
very,
certainly not
very difficult to become part of Japanese society as well, and so on. So, right, nothing indigenously Jewish about Japan.
True. So the question is, why would this piece of literature, which is a total fabrication, it purports to be the minutes of a secret meeting of the international Zionist conspiracy that really runs the world.
Right. And it was fabricated by the Tsarist police in Russia.
Right. This was part of Russia's long history of anti-Semitism, which at many points in the 19th and 20th century became violent, murderous, eliminationist anti-Semitism, although they didn't refine it to the point that the Nazis did. And the Nazis relied on other kinds of anti-Semitic propaganda. They didn't rely heavily on Protocols of the Elders of Zion, because anybody with half a brain knows that it's a fake. Nonetheless, it's been a persistent bestseller. And you were telling me something off air that I wish you would share with your viewers about how in the very early part of the 20th century, before the publication of this book, Japanese, at least the leadership, the rulers, had a very positive relationship with Jews, and
right.
One Jew in particular.
Right, with Jacob Schiff, who was the kind of the scion of all the German Jewish bankers in New York, the Our Crowd group. And he, because of his resentment of the horrible Tsarist regime, which was so viciously anti-Semitic and fomented pogroms and had treated the Jews so brutally, supported the Japanese and helped fund their war against the Russians in the beginning of the 20th century, which resulted in a shocking victory for Japan, both on land and at sea. Eventually, Teddy Roosevelt negotiated the peace and won the Nobel Prize for it. And Schiff became a hero in Japan, became friends with the emperor, traveled to Japan, was feted all over, he and his wife all over Japan, and became sort of the symbol of what a Jew was to the Japanese.
Right. And interestingly, that military defeat in 1905 led to the first and lesser known of the Russian revolutions,
right,
the
right.
second of which took place in 1917.
Right.
And this is a subject to which we should return next week.
and a little bit more about the Protocols of the Design. Thanks, Tom. Chag Chanukah Sameach.
And to you.
We welcome our Mivi Na on Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Big news this week, although for me, long, long overdue. President Trump has said that he will now officially recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, which it has been for a very long time, although it'll take some time to move the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. An Israeli response.
You know, I would say Boker Tov, really? 70 years, Jerusalem is our capital. So, yeah, that's my first reaction. I'm very happy, deeply, you know, very happy. That's my reaction, very happy. But again, it's old news for us. I'm happy that the rest of the world will agree with us now. But with the same neshima, as we say in Hebrew, I'm a little bit worried about, you know what will be the reactions.
I would assume there'll be trouble. In the Middle East, it's always correct to assume there'll be trouble. And with Palestinians, that's a natural assumption. But I don't imagine it'll be another intifada over the United States saying it now recognizes Jerusalem as a capital.
Yeah, and important to really remember and even emphasize, it was never said that it's the undividable Jerusalem. Just recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. It's not the opportunity for negotiation for future peace. It's really important to say that Israelis in general are really eager and really want to have peace and willing to eager. That's the word. We want to have peace, and we understand that we will need to pay the price and even divide Jerusalem. But it's two different things for me. Acknowledging Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and acknowledging the rich history we have, the deep connection. This is like two different things. This is a different thing between a future discussion and a future negotiation.
Absolutely.
And our, really eagerness
for peace, but also just acknowledging the reality. You're going to Israel. You'll be there for Hanukkah, which means something different for you. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Hanukkah was the happiest holiday in our house, and because my brother was born on the eighth candle of Hanukkah. And unfortunately, 15 years ago, it changed a little bit for us because Erev Hanukkah, my father was killed in a terror attack. So since then, we opened Hanukkah with a very heavy,
the yard side.
Heavy heart.
Right.
But ending Hanukkah with a happier, with my brother's birthday. So, yeah, I'm going every year for my father yard site, and this year we're taking my family. And, it's 15 years, so we'll do, it will be a little bit bigger. And,
Listen, may it be in the Siyat Tova, Achag Chanukah Sameach, Achag Urim Sameach.
Toda Rabba, Rabbi.
Thanks, Oshrat. We'll talk soon. Travel safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Toda.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A woman walks into the post office to get stamps for her Hanukkah cards. She says to the clerk, May I have 50 Hanukkah stamps, please? What denomination? Asked the post office clerk. And the woman answers, Oy vey, my God, has it come to this? Okay, give me 6 Orthodox stamps, 12 conservative stamps, and 32 reform stamps. That was the old Jewish Joke of the Week special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well and enjoy Hanukkah, no matter what denomination you are. Now, a word of Torah. This week's Torah portion continues with the Heart of the Joseph story. It's always over Hanukkah we read the great narrative of Joseph in the Torah. That seems appropriate, for this is a time on the Jewish calendar when we celebrate receiving miraculous assistance from God. And the concept of grace, chen in Hebrew, is a central theme in all of this. The last 4 weekly portions in Genesis, reaching a near climax in this week's Parsha of Miketz, form a unique and beautifully wrought literary work focused on Joseph, with a sub-theme based on Judah, which has been called the first truly modern piece of literature. This is particularly impressive since it was written at least 2,500 years ago, and some would add a millennium or so to that number. Many literary techniques are used you can find today in the best novels. Foreshadowing, cliffhangers, subplots, elegant wordplay, role reversals, startling surprises, intrigue of all sorts, character growth and failure, and more. The story of Joseph is better written, richer, and more dramatic than most of our best books and movies today. And the Joseph story's long-term implications are far more significant than that of our contemporary myths and are clear to us as readers throughout the telling. After all, it's because of Joseph that we all end up down in Egypt to become enslaved, liberated, and reinvented as the great people of Israel. But even with all the twists and turns, with the deeper historical meaning, the overriding message is that ultimately, as Joseph himself says, God has a greater plan. We are just a part of it. We can't know the whole, but it will ultimately serve a higher purpose. In this week's portion of Miketz, predictive dreams again play a central role. Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, dreams 2 famous dreams. 7 fat cows emerge from the Nile and are then eaten by 7 skinny cows. Then 7 fat ears of grain are devoured by 7 lean ears of grain. What does it all mean? None of the Egyptian king's brilliant advisors and counselors can help him. Apparently, his cabinet selection team has failed him. In desperation, he turns to a forgotten Hebrew prisoner who once helped his chief wine steward, the Pharaoh's sommelier, when he was in jail with him. It is a young Hebrew lad named Joe. And so, Joseph's dragged from prison, cleaned up, shaved, brought to the Pharaoh, richest and most powerful man in the world. Joseph hears the dream and correctly interprets it as prophesying 7 years of plenty to be followed by 7 years of famine. Giving full credit to God for being the only source of insight, Joseph helps the Pharaoh to save Egypt, and things go well for both him and Egypt. Joseph rises to great prominence, second in command of the whole country, and the Pharaoh's power is multiplied while the Egyptian people are saved from starvation and destruction. Joseph marries and has 2 children. But oddly, his great success, his fame throughout Egypt, his new family aren't quite enough for Joseph. He misses his father, left behind in Canaan. He pines for his younger brother Benjamin, the only reminder of his dead mother. He never expects to see them again. But then, in a plot twist worthy of the best novels, his brothers are compelled by famine to come down to Egypt to buy bread. Suddenly, the same characters who beat him and sold him into slavery are completely in his power. What an amazing opportunity for revenge. And in Miketz, Joseph seems to take advantage of that. He teases and torments his brothers, he fully aware of their identity and they completely ignorant of his. What will happen? As the Torah portion concludes, we're left wondering just which way it will all go. Next week, we'll get the answer. But this week of Miketz, we are comforted because we know that we are not really in control. Ultimately, it's all in God's hands. Although we strive to act well and live well, many things remain beyond us. Ultimately, we have to rely on Achen, the grace of God. It works for Joseph. Maybe it will work for us, too. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, the delightful A.J. Jacobs, will explain how he is related to just about everybody famous ever, and we all are, and how A.J. Jacobs discovered that and put it into his new book, It's All Relative. Find out when we come back in a moment, right here on To Jewish.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
President Trump announced last week the U.S. will begin calling Jerusalem the capital of Israel. Eventually, the U.S. Embassy will move from Tel Aviv to the actual capital itself. This is a step towards something that, frankly, should have happened long, long ago, and which every American president, Democrat and Republican since Bill Clinton, has failed to do. Trump said that he will now recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital because, well, it is the capital. It's where the seat of Israel's government is and has been for seven decades. And there is broad U.S. bipartisan support for this recognition. Recognizing Jerusalem is a campaign pledge that Trump made. And besides that, not recognizing the city as Israel's capital has done nothing to advance the peace process until now. Trump spoke in advance with the leaders of Israel, the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, Jordan, and Saudi Arabia, and made clear that U.S. recognition does not preclude a final status outcome from the city. He says that's still up to the countries and parties involved. Trump also said that the status quo at the holy site, known to Jews as the Temple Mount and to Muslims as Haram al-Sharif, will not change and should not change. Muslims currently exert control over access to the Temple Mount mostly, which includes the shrine of the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That is considered the third holiest site in Islam. The adjacent western wall just below the Kotel is wholly under Israeli control. The Temple Mount itself is the holiest site in the world for Judaism, but Israeli authorities, in a long-term arrangement with Jordan that goes back to 1967, forbid Jewish prayer at the site in order to try to prevent Palestinians from rioting. Palestinian and Arab leaders warned Trump that recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital would be explosive and scuttle the peace process his son-in-law Jared Kushner is trying to start or revive or something. To calm them, Trump says he now backs a two-state solution if that's what the parties want. Soon after assuming the presidency back in January, President Trump broke with a decade of U.S. policy and pulled back from endorsing a two-state solution. No site has yet been identified for the new U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. It will likely take at least 4 years to build one. The new U.S. embassy in London, in comparison, which was due to open next year, took 8 years to build. Trump will sign a waiver of the 1995 law mandating the embassy move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. That waiver has to be renewed every 6 months. Trump missed the December 1st deadline, but he will now sign it after acknowledging Jerusalem as the capital. Senior U.S. advisors dismiss claims that opening the embassy will take simply affixing a new plaque on the U.S. consulate already in Jerusalem, saying that a whole range of security protocols need to be in place before opening an embassy. However, I often walked by that U.S. consulate in Jerusalem. I know it pretty well. It is huge and already may be the best secured site in a city full of security. In any case, it's great that he did this. There will be some trouble, but it's about time. For the second time in a week, Israel struck targets near the Syrian capital Damascus with regime air defenses in Syria claiming to have intercepted incoming Israeli missiles. According to Syrian state news agency Sana, a military scientific research center on the outskirts of Damascus was targeted. Syrians claim that their air defense system intercepted 3 of the Israeli missiles. They did not, however, say how many Israeli missiles got through and hit their Syrian targets. According to the Hezbollah-affiliated Al-Mayadeen news site, Israeli warplanes flew over southern Lebanon at a low level before launching 6 missiles towards a research center in the Jamraya area. The Syrian defenses confronted the aircraft in the area, as the area itself had been subjected to Israeli raids more than once, the report said. This military scientific research center was established during the 1980s. It is believed to be one of the most important Syrian centers for weaponry in the country. Israeli jets have targeted the facility in the past. The first reported strike on the center was back in 2013. Israel almost never comments on foreign reports of military activity in Syria, but it has publicly stated that it has now struck over 100 Hezbollah convoys and other targets in Syria. Syrian media reported Israel struck an Iranian base near the town of Al-Kiswa, 15 kilometers southwest of Damascus, with 5 missiles as well. Back in September, the BBC revealed satellite imagery showing Iran established a military base in Syria with several buildings housing soldiers and military vehicles. That Iranian base is just 50 kilometers south of Israel's Golan Heights, just 30 miles away. Israel has warned of the growing entrenchment of Iran in Syria. Satellite images of the base released last week showed rubble left over from a previous Israeli airstrike. Israeli officials have repeatedly voiced concern over the growing Iranian presence on its borders and the smuggling of sophisticated weaponry to Hezbollah in Lebanon from Tehran via Syria, stressing that both are red lines for the Jewish state. Last week, Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Ron Dermer, reiterated Israel's position, saying Jerusalem understands exactly what Iran's goals are. Israel will not allow this to happen. We are not going to allow Iran to establish permanent bases, military bases on land, sea, or anywhere else. We're not going to allow them to take over because we understand exactly what their goals are, the threat they pose to us. We have to make sure that we're doing everything to push them back. If Iran is not rolled back in Syria, Dermer added, the chances of military confrontation grow. I don't want to tell you by the year or the month, I'd say even by the week, because the more Iran pushes, we have to enforce red lines, you always have the prospect of an escalation, even when parties don't really want it. In taking action to defend ourselves, you don't know what could happen, but I think it's higher than people think. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish author A.J. Jacobs. He's the author of the new book, It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. The author of The Year of Living Biblically. He's kind of a human experimenter in digging into different and interesting ideas. His first book was The Know-It-All, One Man's Humble Quest to Become the Smartest Person in the World. And he continues to find interesting and challenging things for all of us. He's an editor-at-large for Esquire magazine, a commentator on NPR, columnist for Mental Floss magazine. So this giant family tree of all the human beings on Earth, what implications are there in a period in which people seem very interested both in connecting and distancing themselves from others?
Well, that's it. It is a fascinating time because tribalism is just on the rise, and everyone is, has this us versus them mentality. And hopefully, my hope is that this will erode just a bit the more negative aspects of tribalism. And there was a very interesting study just the last year, a Harvard study, where they took Israelis and Palestinians, and they told one group of Israelis and Palestinians how closely they were related. They showed them. And then the other group, they didn't. And the group that was told how they were related was kinder to each other and more open to negotiation. So there are possible real-world implications. And I'll give you, it has changed my point of view as well. And I'll give you an example, slightly more trivial, but you know Judge Judy, you're a pop culture fan.
Of course, of course.
Sure. I always despise, you know, she just was so obnoxious and nails on the chalkboard grating. And then I found out through my family tree, she's like my 8th cousin. And I thought, you know what? she's not so bad. She's just cousin Judy. She's just doing her shtick and she's probably a sweetheart. So it does actually, you know, when someone cuts you off in traffic, I do try this heuristic of saying, oh, we probably have a 10th great grandpa in common. I'm going to try not to be quite as angry toward. I'm still angry, but not as angry.
So I don't know what that does for, you know, Thanksgiving or Pesach Seder, where you're seated next to the cousin or aunt or uncle that you never could stand, but you still sit next to them, don't you?
Well, yeah, they're family. And with this new family, you can invite, you know, 100,000 people to your next Seder. And then you don't have to sit next to the one that you don't like. You got a lot to choose from.
So many options. Tell us about the global family reunion.
Well, this is similar to what you just said. It sort of was like Pesach, but for all the world. When I figured out I was related to these millions of people, I thought, why not throw a party to celebrate the human family? And I invited all 7 billion, but we didn't get 100% turnout. But we did. It was a very strange day and memorable. It was about 10,000 people in 40 different parties around the world, from New Zealand to Mexico to New York. And we all at the same time sang We Are Family with Sister Sledge. They were there at the New York one. And it was just the strangest cocktail of humans that I had ever seen. At one point, we had a rabbi, a minister, and a Buddhist monk on stage. So it was like the start of a joke. And you were invited. You could have been a second rabbi.
I'm sorry I missed it. You know, I didn't root for the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates, and that was their theme song, so maybe there was some leftover residual resentment. It's possible.
They did say, don't invite the rabbi.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't. It was a Dave Parker thing in those days. In the process of exploring all of this remarkable genealogy, besides Jeffrey Dahmer, was there somebody else you really didn't want to be related to that you discovered you were?
Well, it's interesting because there's this guy, he's a Jewish guy actually, named Ron Ahrens. And the book partly is all about these amazing characters in this community. And he will go to genealogy conventions dressed in a black and white striped prison suit, and he will, his business is all about like black sheep genealogy, finding the horrible people in your past. And people pay him for that. So he helped me uncover some I know Jeffrey Dahmer's, but I had one guy who was in the Teapot Dome scandal.
In the Harding administration in the 1920s, wow.
That's it. And it was like the biggest scandal until possibly now. And they, well, I guess Watergate.
Watergate probably in between, right?
But this guy, I think he was my second cousin three times removed. He was all about extortion and blackmail and adultery. So he had a lot going on. But it is fun too. There is something, some sort of street cred in having these black sheep in your family.
So tell us like the methodology for finding all of this. Like if somebody wants to dig in and find all the people in their family, how did you start and what's the best way to do it?
Well, the good news is this is the best time ever to do this kind of stuff, because the resources are so easily available. You know, you used to have to go to, I don't know, Sacramento, and you go to a court basement and get the records there. Now, so much of it is online, and I have a whole section in the back of the book on how to do it, but the general idea is join one of these ancestry services. Ancestry is a good one, MyHeritage. And just start filling, or genie.com, that's the one that will connect you to everyone in the world. And then just start filling in what you know about the birth dates of your ancestors, and it will send you hints and help connect you to bigger and bigger trees. And then, of course, there's also the 23andMe and other DNA services. That's an additional way to go that will sort of boost and work with the ancestry services.
Besides the way you interact with others, knowing that everybody's probably related, do you feel in any way differently about yourself? I know when you've gone through your other personal experimentation experiences, you found like it changed aspects of your own life and your own personal relationships, close ones. How did this change you?
Well, I think I am much more accepting of failure in myself and in others, which is a good thing, because there was a great study a couple of years ago that kids who learned their family's history were actually better adjusted than those who didn't. And the reason wasn't that they knew the dates of their ancestors' birth. It was because they had been told these stories that about the ups and downs. What the psychologist in charge of the study said was the oscillating narrative. So you want to tell your kids, oh, you know, great Uncle Saul went bankrupt and, he got divorced 7 times. But we also have in our family, great Uncle Albert, who won the Pulitzer Prize. So you want to show the good and the bad, and that through it all, the family sticks together, and it teaches people the importance of perseverance and grit. So that's what I loved, is learning the stories of the sacrifices that my ancestors made, and how we used to have survived, and hopefully we'll continue to survive.
Were there black holes that you never were able to figure out in that gigantic genetic tree, in that family tree?
They call them brick walls. That's the lingo, not black holes.
Sorry.
But, oh, yeah. All right. I will forgive you. But, yeah, there's tons. There's tons of them. I mean, you have, if you think about it, you have 2 parents, 4 grandparents, 8 great-grandparents. So you keep doubling that, and you have, by the 10th generation, hundreds of thousands of ancestors. So you're never going to be able to find all information about all of them. I was lucky because one of my lines goes back to the Vilna Gaon, who the great rabbi from Lithuania, and he... they kept excellent records.
They were meticulous about everything, I'm sure. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. It was interesting, actually. I talked to the guy who wrote the biography of the Vilna Gaon, genius. I think his name is Stern from Yale. And one interesting thing is he was, of course, one of the greatest scholars of all time, not the best family man, not a great dad. Kind of a little too busy with his studies to pay much attention to the kids. So he didn't have the work-life balance down. So it was interesting because I felt a little of that when I was doing my project. I was so busy putting together this family reunion that I was kind of neglecting my own family.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was an irony. So since then, I've gone back and paid my reparations.
I'm not going to ask what form that payment took, but...
Lots of mini golf and, yeah.
Yes, yes. All those wonderful, wonderful family experiences. You have explored so many interesting and surprising areas. Are you going to continue with this? Or are you going in a different direction next?
My next one is, it's sort of up your alley, maybe a little. Mm-hmm. It was due 3 weeks ago, and I'm actually writing it. I was writing it right before this interview, and I'll go back to it. It is, I take one of my great joys, my morning cup of coffee, and I go around the world trying to thank everyone who made it possible. So the guys who picked the beans, the people who designed the logo, the truckers, the people who made the tires for the trucks, the people who made the speed for the truck drivers so they can stay up all night. Not that one. But but the general idea is the thanking, showing that there are thousands of people involved in every little thing we do.
The interconnectedness of everything.
Exactly. That's a big theme for me.
You know, in the course of creating It's All Relative, you discovered all these interesting things about the human family. Are you going to continue these, global family reunions, or was that a one-shot deal?
Well, it's interesting. interesting. I think there will be another. I founded it, but someone else, one of my other distant cousins, is taking it over because I found it just too time-consuming. But hopefully, yes, it looks like it's going to live on.
And more people will be connected in more and more ways. It's All Relative, of course, is available on Amazon and everywhere else books are sold. Tell us, your website is ajjacobs.com.
That's it. Simple. Exactly. And I'm at Twitter at ajjacobs and all that business.
And more ways to be connected. I guess a last question. You know, everybody thinks they're connected to through social media to everyone else now. Was it different to actually meet some of the people?
Well, it was fun. Yes, I think there's a big difference between being connected online and meeting people face to face. I will say this global tree is a very effective way to reach out to people and actually meet them. For instance, I wanted to interview George H.W. Bush because I figured he was a patriarch of an interesting family. I called his press person and she said, sorry, we're not doing any interviews. I said, well, I understand, but you should know he is my third cousin, four times removed, wife, nephews, aunt, third cousin. And she said, really? Well, let me see what I can do. And she came back, and believe it or not, she let me interview him because we were quote-unquote cousins. So it's like a very effective social networking tool.
Man, I'm going to have to try that next time I'm trying to get a difficult interview. Again, I want to thank A.J. Jacobs for a delightful interview here on Too Jewish. And I don't think we're actually related, except if you go back to, you know, all Jewish relationships, but it's possible.
Now, the Jews were quite endogamous, as they say, so we're probably around 8th or 10th cousins.
Probably so. Thanks, AJ. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Sharon Hart Green, author of the outstanding debut novel, Come Back For Me. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish for the upcoming holiday of Hanukkah arriving this Tuesday. Just three more shopping days on Amazon for that first night and only about, oh, I don't know, 9 or 10 more for the final night of Hanukkah. Our playout is from a past guest of Too Jewish, the reggae singer Matis Yahu, and his delightful Happy Hanukkah. My friends, may you have a Chag Chanukah Sameach, a Chag Urim Sameach, a happy beginning and middle of the holiday of lights and latkes, and a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
Tonight is the night, sunset, twilight, head back, come along, take flight. I am twinkle and a shooting in the sky, I'm shining and I'm feeling alright. Light a candle for the one you love, peace and light from below to above. 8 nights, celebrate till I fly in the sky like a dove. Let me unwind as I light up a flame in the name of the Lion of Judah. Drop like a hammer when I fall like the rain, sun shower, feel a baba when I hit like a train. Time.
with the divine. It's a battle through your spine. It's a battle from the ancient line. Son of King David, Maccabee till the end of time. You're my light in this hardest time. Yes, you bring peace to my mind. Won't you please let me unwind? As I light up a flame in the name of the Lion of Judah. Drop like a hammer when I fell like the rain. Sun shower, feel a baba when I hit like a train. Happy
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.